From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, throughout this campaign season, we've welcomed candidates for prominent federal, state, and local offices. Last week, we sat down with two Democrats running for state senate, Jen Lunsford and Jeremy Cooney. This hour, we sit down with the two incumbent Republicans in those districts. Later this hour, we'll welcome Senator Joe Robach. But first, we sit down with Senator Rich Funke, who was first elected 4 years ago. He's seeking another term in the Senate with a focus on economic growth and cutting taxes. And it's a chance to examine his work in Albany, his views on government, and more. State Senator Rich Funke, welcome back to Connections. Nice to have you here.
Good to be here. How are you?
Very good. You know, I remember 4 years ago, you know, you ran on the notion of cutting taxes, economic growth that's really driven by business, not necessarily government. And, you know, it's been, I actually started the process of reviewing your record, and I thought, has it been 2 or 4 years? Time flies.
Yeah, so
I'm,
sure does.
I'm wondering how you feel.
So they should be four-year terms, by the way.
Yeah, this would be a third term for you. So I'm wondering how you feel 4 years in now about how our state approaches economic growth and maybe what you've learned or has anything surprised you in Albany?
You know, it's a surprise every day in Albany in terms of some of the things that we can't get done because we don't talk enough about it. But I think, you know, on balance, in terms of cutting taxes, we have cut income taxes to a 20-year low. When fully phased in, we have cut the manufacturing tax to zero. Property taxes are more of a challenge, certainly. There are a lot of discussions about, you know, the state taking over Medicaid, and that sounds like a good idea, but you're really going from one pocket to another pocket, frankly, when you're talking about picking up costs. So, you know, we have to look at all of those things and how we can do it. On the economic development side, I'm really excited about Rochester right now. I feel like we're about to turn the corner here. When I traveled around my district, which is, as you know, runs from Irondequoit down to Naples through the city and Victor and so on, I see a lot of high-tech businesses that are popping up in Victor and areas around there, you know, kind of under the radar kind of stuff. Maybe we're beginning to make the turn. I see a lot of people moving downtown, which is a good indicator sometimes that people want to stay here. And that, to me, is the key. I mean, you want people to stay in your community. We don't want people moving out. We don't want businesses moving out. We want to keep them here. We want to create a climate for them economically that they want to stay here and they can be successful here.
So 4 years in, what would you tell voters is your biggest accomplishment so far in Albany?
You know, I think, you know, when you talk about funding streams and so on, I think from the time that we've gone in on the education side, we have been able to put an extra $1 billion a year in education all 4 years that I have been there. Community projects that we have been able to fund, you know, a lot because communities are under the 2% tax cap. Towns like Irondequoit come and say, you know, we could, you know, would there be any funding available, a funding stream available maybe for a new field at Camp Eastman? Things of that nature that we're able to bring some of those tax dollars home. Now, I will say this. Some people call it pork. I think it's ridiculous because if I'm not fighting for those dollars for our communities that, you know, to enhance their recreational facilities or their community centers, or their senior centers, whatever the case may be, that money's going to be spent and it's going to go to New York City. And that's why Senator Robach and I fight so hard for that. So we've done that. RGH, the expansion at Rochester General Hospital, has been a big thing for us. We were able to get them $6 million toward that expansion. And on the legislative side, we've done a lot of things in terms of protecting laws that are protecting first responders. Child Health Plus was an issue that was important to me when we had a constituent come to me my first week in office and say, did you know under Child Health Plus that a baby isn't covered for the first month? I said, that sounds a little ridiculous to me, but let's look into it. And sure enough, that was the case. And we were able to close that loophole. Paid family leave is something that we passed. Minimum wage is something that we passed. So there's been a lot of things happening in the last 4 years for sure.
Well, and the county executive, Cheryl Donolfo, told us last week she does want to see New York State assume the full cost of Medicaid. Right now, our state, one of the only that passes a portion of the cost on the counties. First of all, I was trying to come up with the actual number in the latest budget year. I mean, it's a It's a lot of money for Medicaid. Do you know what the actual number is, what the state spends on Medicaid?
The state spends $60 billion a year, over $1 billion a week on Medicaid, providing services that in some cases are 70% higher than the national average. By way of comparison, Evan, the state of California spends $80 billion a year on Medicaid. We're number two, but California has 15 million more residents than the state of New York. So it's a lot of money, and you know, we should be looking at that because, to me, in a way, we have kind of a perfect storm going on here in New York State. We have people of means leaving New York State, and understand that 80% of the New York State budget comes from income taxes. So we have people of means moving out of the state. We have people who need services moving into the state. So we have to get our arms around some of that and find out, you know, can we be a bit more efficient in certain areas? And what can we do to stem that tide?
Do you want to see the state take back the full cost, take it away from the counties, as Ms. DeNolfo said last week?
I think that's a good idea. I think that's something that we certainly ought to look at. I know I've had a lot of conversations with the county executive about that. They believe that we could, you know, reduce income taxes by 30%. But let's make certain that if the state is going to take over the Medicaid portion, 100%, let's make certain that that, in fact, does happen to property taxes, and that we're not, that counties and communities are not taking that money and putting it into other areas. Let's put it directly to property taxes. That would be the key.
Okay. So, and we're talking, what, maybe $15, $20 billion a year more that New York State would have to cover if this change happened. Is that right? Something like that?
Something like that,
okay.
Yeah.
So where are we going to cut elsewhere? How is New York State going to handle that cost?
Well, that's the $64,000 question, right? I mean, you have to look at, you know, what we're doing now. Where can we find more efficiencies? Where can we find more transparency in what we're doing? As an example, the governor now doles out about $8 billion a year in direct aid to companies in terms of either tax relief or direct aid to projects to retain businesses here in New York State. I'd like to take a good look at that. I have great respect for the regional economic development councils and the people that serve on them. They work very hard, but I don't think the governor's economic development plan has been a winner, certainly not for upstate New York. And so I think we need to take a look at that and let businesses get out of the way of business has always been my thing, you know. Look at regulations, cut some of the onerous regulations that they have to deal with day in and day out. Get out of the way and let businesses compete. And let them. I don't think we're not in the process of creating jobs. We should be in the process of creating an environment that creates jobs for business and economic development, whether it's workforce development, retraining people, things of that nature. But, you know, $8 billion is a lot of dough.
But it sounds like, so when Mark Molinaro, when Cheryl DeNolfo, Republican county executives, and a candidate for governor say, we've got to take back the cost of Medicaid to the state level, that will help property taxes, that will help county governments, it doesn't sound like Republicans at the state level have a plan for how to cover the cost right now. You're not giving direct, you're giving ideas, but there's not a plan in place to do this tomorrow, it doesn't sound like.
No, it's an idea. It's an idea worth pursuing. And I think we're going to do that. But, you know, you're not going to do it overnight, and you're not going to do it, you know, in a haphazard fashion. You have to put a plan together.
Healthcare, is our system working as you'd like to see it work?
You know, I think we have great healthcare in our community. You know, we have two great hospitals. We have great ancillary operations as well. I was just over at Trillium Health earlier today, and we were able to get them a grant for them to be able to expand their services. Service is not the issue. Cost is always the issue when it comes to healthcare. So, you know, I'm proud of what we've been able to do locally in the healthcare area, but we need to, you know, figure out a way, both nationally and on a statewide basis, how we bring the cost down. To me, it's a matter of competition, making certain that healthcare services out there are competing for your dollars, making certain that, you know, that is the case. So,
and you mentioned Trillium. So you secured about a $500,000 grant for Trillium.
Yes.
And so that's an organization that in many ways has been a pillar for the LGBTQ community in this country. And had an email from a listener this morning who knew you were coming on saying had attended a forum that you were at, I think, last week on healthcare locally, maybe a couple weeks ago now. And the listener was making some claims about your thoughts about LGBTQ community. I was not at the forum. So let me just ask you, the listener wanted to know about your views on transgender Americans. I don't want to speak for you. So let's just start broadly speaking. What are your views on what the Trump administration has said about transgender Americans in that biology is sex is gender, and that there essentially is no such thing as transgender in the Trump administration's eyes? How do you feel about it?
Well, first of all, when it comes to all of that, in our state, the governor has passed executive orders to make certain that that it is effective law that people are not discriminated against in housing. Circumstances, not discriminated against in their jobs. This is an executive order. So people, when they talk about the gender legislation, so much of that is unnecessary now because the governor has effectively put this into place. I think the only, problem, and I've always said to everybody, everybody deserves your respect, all God's children, as far as I'm concerned. The only hang-up that some people have is about the locker room issue on gender. And so, how comfortable would you feel in a locker room setting, if your kids were in a locker room setting, if somebody came in who, was male in a female locker room or female in a male locker room, how would that make you feel as a parent? And that's what a lot of people have a hang up about. And how do we address that?
Do you have a hang up about that?
Well, certainly I'm concerned about that. I think anybody who's a parent would, and that's what I hear about from my constituents, frankly. I mean, that's a lot of what we hear from them as well. That's an issue. The bathroom setting is not as much of an issue.
It's locker room and not
stall.
Bathroom?
It's more a locker room and a more open circumstance, If you're in a bathroom, you've got a stall you can go into, right?
But you're saying this is an issue for parents who are concerned about kids?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, as a parent, it doesn't bother me. It's not a concern that I have.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand the point you're making and what you're hearing from your constituents. So what is the solution then? In your mind, the solution would be if you have sort of physical biology, that will tell you where you need to be in a locker room?
In my mind right now, because the governor of the state of New York has issued an executive order, there is no issue. There is no issue. These circumstances have been taken care of. School districts are doing what they need to do right now. I'm talking about the bill itself, which, by the way, has not come to the floor. So nobody is. It hasn't been reported out of the health committee. It hasn't come to the floor, so there's nothing to vote on. People want to get together and negotiate it out. Then we'll take a look at it. But as far as school districts and what they're doing now, they're handling the issue, I think. And if they're not, then I'd like to know about it.
Okay. So let's move to one other issue before maybe we grab a couple of phone calls before the half hour is up with State Senator Rich Funke. Governor Cuomo has said that New York state government needs to be a check on the Trump administration. He points as an example to the Trump administration deciding to pull the United States out of the Paris Climate Treaty. And so let's start there. Do you think that New York State has to be a check on the Trump administration? Are you happy with the performance of the Trump administration?
I'm not happy with the performance of the Cuomo administration. Why are you trying to drag us into Washington politics? My concern is about Albany. It's not about Washington. It's not about Trump. It's about us in this state. And if you want to talk about a check, you need a check on Andrew Cuomo, and that is the New York State Senate right now. That is the Republican Senate. If you take a look at the Senate, of the 63 state senators, the 32 who are in the majority right now, they are sprinkled about upstate New York, from all facets of upstate New York, from the Adirondacks to the Catskills to Binghamton to Syracuse to upstate New York and Rochester. You want to flip the card over and take a look at the Democrats on that side. All but two are in New York City, in the New York City metropolitan area. So the balance is the Republican Senate. To check on making certain that upstate New York is not dominated by New York City and Long Island. We have different views on different issues up here, and that's the check that I think is most important when we talk about New York State.
But Washington can impact us here. I mean, at least the logic, I think, is You can say what you want about Andrew Cuomo, and certainly he's never come on this program. We'd love to see him. But if Rob Astorino was the governor and Hillary Clinton were the president and Governor Astorino were saying, look, I'm concerned about what the Democrats are doing in Washington, we've got to be a check on that here. That wouldn't make sense to you?
You know, look, I don't like everything that, you know, what President Trump says. You know, I wish there are times that he would say things differently. He's not the most eloquent speaker that, you know, the White House has ever seen. You know, he tweets a lot of things that maybe he shouldn't. He ought to think twice about it. But he is who he is. He's a businessman in the White House. He's never been a politician. And there's a transition that is slowly occurring, I think. But I always say to people, you know, you want to judge people on their personalities or you want to judge them on their progress and on their policy. And on balance, on the progress and the policy, I support what's going on. I like what's happening in the economy. I like what's happening in my 401k. I like what's happening in a lot of different areas. So, you know, you want to talk about the tax reform bill, you know, that the president put in place. I think that's been a great thing for business, certainly. More money is coming back into the United States. More companies are staying here and not going abroad. And in my district, you know, 90% of the people in my district are making out better under the tax reform than otherwise is the case.
So you think that bill is not just to help the wealthy?
And let me just say this.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. And the other thing is that I think that when it comes to New York State and Governor Cuomo trying to sue the president and trying to get around all of these different things on the tax side, I do think that it provides us with an opportunity to take a good hard look at what we're doing in New York State and where we're spending our money and how and why we are spending what we are spending, an $167 billion budget, it's a giant reset for us too, and say, okay, maybe we need to take a look at this thing instead of just saying, okay, well, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to us. It's an opportunity for self-examination.
Right. And the governor has said he wants to see us invest more in dealing with climate change. The IPCC report has sort of added some urgency. What did you make of that report?
Well, I'm bored with climate change, but you can't do it in a vacuum. New York State can't do it alone, you know, and I support what we're trying to do by 2030 in terms of 30% renewables. My record on that has been pretty clear. We support that. We support more money in the EPF. We support, you know, we've put a lot of money into water infrastructure funding and things of that nature. So, yes, yeah, certainly we are all on board with that. I think, you know, when you're talking about renewables, you're talking about, you know, gas, you know, as in a nuclear, all of these things have to be a part of the equation. You know, up in Niagara Falls, we have some of the least expensive power available to us is hydropower. But it's bottled up in Niagara Falls. We can't get it to parts of the state that need that power the most. And so we have to look at that infrastructure part of it as well. So there's a lot of things that we can do, a lot of things that we should do. But, you know, at the end of the day, Evan, it all boils down to money. And the one thing that the governor said in his very first State of the State address that I'll never forget and is true is that our taxes are high because we spend too much. That was Andrew Cuomo's line, not mine, but I thought it was a good one. But the one thing that we never do, and I've never had anybody come to my office, whether it was a not-for-profit or anybody else who asked for less money, everybody wants more. Everybody needs a little bit more. So we have to, you know, take a good hard look at this. That's for sure.
All right, let's squeeze in a couple of phone calls before the half hour is up. And in Fairport, this is Debbie. Go ahead, Debbie.
Yes, hello.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Senator. I'm off the subject here a little bit. You haven't addressed this in your talk so far today, but I'm just wondering where you stand on the issue of taxpayer-funded elections. I go back and forth myself with the pros and cons, and I'd like to know where you stand on that and what your thought is. Thank you.
Thanks, Debbie.
Thanks, Debbie. I don't believe in it. I don't think that people want robocalls and mail and negative mail, you know, sent to people on their taxpayer dime. But that's me. I know others have different opinions on that, but I don't support that.
We have a lot of mail this time of year.
Yes, you sure yes, do.
And the phone next
is... You never know when it's going to arrive either, by the way.
Keith is next with Senator Rich Funke. Go ahead, Keith.
Hey, Senator, a couple quick questions. Those state senators have a franking position where they can mail informational literature at taxpayers' expense?
Yes, there's a budget in place for franking mail. Yep. The hope is that when you...
I predicted what you just said to the other woman.
No. There's a difference between franking mail and campaign material. Campaign stuff is what's going out now. You can't... What's that?
It's still paid for by the taxpayer.
No.
Right?
Campaign mail is not. No.
Well, isn't that what franking...
No.
...position is, where the taxpayer... Okay, well, then I guess I'm wrong.
No, there's...
But I got a quick question, though, before you leave.
Okay.
The state is in debt up to $63 billion, expected to hit $71 billion.
Correct.
That's how much the taxpayers of this state owe.
That's right.
Yet I see no sense of urgency on either side of the aisle to do anything about it. They just keep kicking the can down the road so far that... Evan's children will be stuck holding the bag for it.
Yeah, mine as well.
And nobody ever talks about it. I have yet to see one campaign, anything come across saying, well, we have to do something about New York State's debt.
All right, Keith, well, let me ask the senator to respond. Should we do something about the debt?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, one thing you can do about the debt is have a better business environment that creates more taxes, and you've got more coming in than you've got going out. And, you know, that helps reduce the debt. But the other thing is to put, you know, we've put a 2% cap on spending, at least in the New York State Senate. It would be wonderful if the Cuomo administration would do the same thing when it comes to budgets. 2% is still 2% is still going up. But, you know, the more that we can do to get our arms around, you know, spending dollars that don't work as well, because when it comes to economic development, there are a whole host of projects that the governor has put forward that have not created a job. So what do we need to do about that? Well, you need transparency in these projects. If a company says that they're going to create X amount of jobs with the amount of money that's being invested, then they need to create that. And if they don't create that, then we need a clawback procedure in order to get that money returned to the state of New York. There are bills that are active and in right now on the Senate side to give the state comptroller that authority. The assembly will not pass it.
All right, one more quick question. Janice on Twitter writes to us and says, you heard your remarks saying that the president is ineloquent, maybe shouldn't be tweeting sometimes when he does. But she says she wants to hear GOP candidates asked if the rhetoric is actually destructive and harmful about immigrants, journalists, women, and institutions. And she hasn't seen anything that suggests how you feel about that.
You know, I think on the far left and the far right, I think those are the comments that seem to be generating the most news, you know, on a daily basis. And I think they're both wrong. The president blames the media a lot. And I'll tell you what, I spent 41 years in the media and I know a little bit about it. And I'll tell you this, every news director has a choice every day as to what soundbite they want to run and what stories they want to cover. And the most incendiary soundbites are the ones that are going to hit the airwaves. In this interview today, if I give you something incendiary, I will guarantee you that the mundane comment that I make is not going to make your newscast. It's going to be the incendiary one. And that's your choice. And that's the media's choice.
We don't just put the incendiary stuff. That's the reason we want to do a half hour or a full hour.
Yeah, but I'm talking about. In a half hour newscast, every news director has an opportunity to decide what they want to do. And so I blame the left. I blame the right. I blame the media. I blame everybody who wants to continually turn up the volume.
So dial it back. I'm with you. My solution is watch less of local TV news and tune into long-form interviews.
Well, there you go.
Long-form interviews.
But you're right. I mean, dial it back and rise above it and, act in a proper fashion and, for God's sake, say the right thing at the right time and try to do the right thing if you're in public life. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to leave you with this right now. I hate politics. I hate it. I like public service. But politics gets in the way of public service too often in Washington and in Albany. And that's what we need to fix. We need to drop the volume down, begin talking to one another. Politics is supposed to be the great art of compromise. And that's where we need to get to again.
State Senator Rich Funke, running for re-election. Always appreciate the time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Thank you very much. Rich Funke, short break, and State Senator Joe Robach next with us right here on Connections.